Shri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami, First Division, Second Wave. There's 44 limbs of devotion, 44 primary limbs out of 64. We're discussing number 59, which is special respect for the advent day of the Lord by the way of observing fast, etc. Janmad, Janmadina Adishu. Observing Janmashtami and other special occasions. So this is one of the limbs of bhakti or devotion, to observe Krishna's birthday, appearance day. And the scriptures give the rules that we should observe. There's one interesting story once. I think it was Gaurakishore. Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He was, of course, a Vairagi Sadhu. Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Sakshat Vairagya Murtaye. Sakshat Vairagya Murtaye. He was a form, Murti, of the direct form of Vairagya or detachment. Very renounced personality. And he, one day, he was telling his servant, he said, we'll celebrate a big festival. It's a very big day tomorrow. Tomorrow is Guru Purnima. Tomorrow is the disappearance day or the Tirobhava of Srila Sanatana Goswami. And we'll observe the disappearance day of Srila Sanatana Goswami in a very grand and glorious way. And then the servant was saying, "But Babaji Maharaj, you say we're going to have a big utsav, Tirubhav utsav, Tirubhav mahotsav. Yes, 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 tomorrow we'll have a very grand Tirubhav mahotsav to honor Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj." And so that night, the servant of Gaurakishore was wondering, how you honor this festival day? What is his idea of an utsav? Because I know that my Shiksha Guru or Babaji Maharaj doesn't have any money. So if you want to have a festival, you usually need some money to make arrangements and decorations and to procure food items, to prepare a very elaborate offering for the Lord, bhog offering, and distribute prasadam, sumptuous prasadam to all the invited guests. And there should be some lighting and some stage and many expenditures to have a big utsav. So they didn't have any of that kind of money to do any of those things. So next day, the disciple or follower said, "Babaji Maharaj, how are we going to celebrate this utsav?" He says, "Yes, we're going to have a very grand utsav. We're going to sit down here in front of one painting of Sanatana Goswami that I borrowed from one temple, and we're going to chant the holy name all day. You and I will chant the holy name all day. And this way we'll celebrate the life and teachings and disappearance of Sanatana Goswami." This was his idea of a grand festival. Simply to chant all day the holy name. Akhanda Kirtan, Utsav. So of course this is the best offering to the Lord, is to offer one's pure devotion through the means of the holy name, Shudanam. You could say Shudanam Arpan, worshipping the Lord with the pure holy name. But nevertheless, the point is that devotees should show special respect for the Advent day by way of observing fast, etc. So we do so many things. We cook for the Lord. We preach the glories of the Lord on His appearance day. And we may do prikama and chant extra rounds. We may offer extra prayers. It should not go by unnoticed. We should be very cognizant and aware of these holy days and duly worship the Lord accordingly. And I think for the most part, everyone here knows about this point of properly observing the appearance of the Lord. Janma Adi Adishu. So that's number 59. And number 60 is liking with special interest for worshipping the feet of the Sri Murti in the temple. That's a rather long Sanskrit term. This is the 60th limb of devotion, which is what it says here. Having faith and great affection or serving the deity. So here it says serving. It says Shraddha, Shraddha Visheshita Priti, Sri Murtir Angri Sevane. Angri means lotus feet. Kamalangri. Serving the lotus feet. So serving the lotus feet of the beautiful Murti with extra, with Vishesh, with special faith and love. Literally, that's what it means. Shraddha Visheshita Priti, Sri Murtir Angri Sevane. To serve the lotus feet of the Archamurti or the deity that you worship, to serve them with Vishesh, with very specialized, special faith, Shraddha, and love. So here it says, liking with special interest for worshipping the Sri Murti. In other words, we shouldn't be negligent of the deity in the temple or the deity in our house. It's not that, yes, we have a temple room, we have a deity there, and he's there, and I go in and offer, make an offering, ring the bell, and go away. I don't have any special interest. I don't show any special love towards that deity, Priti, Vishesh Priti, and I don't have any extra special faith in that deity. But we should have, all of our faith should be in the deity. So this is a principle, liking with special interest, or worshipping the feet of Sri Murti. And it says here, having faith and great affection, or serving the deity. I guess this is the merciful presentation of the Lord before us. Because we can't see or touch the Lord with our material senses. So out of His kindness, the Lord manifests immaterial objects, which we can see and feel and touch. Simply to accept our service and help convince us that yes, the Lord is a person. Although He's a supreme Brahman, He's inconceivable, unlimited, unfathomable, all-pervading Brahman. He's also actually a transcendental person. He has arms and legs and hands and face and nose, eyes, ears, everything. But His form, of course, is Divya Kalevaram. He's transcendental. So the Murti is made of material elements. Daru Brahman means a Murti made of wood, like Jagannathji. And then there's Murti is made of pearls or jewels, Mani Murti. And there's Manasa Murti, Murti made in the mind, the thought Lord, or the thought deity, envisioned in the mind. But all these forms of the Lord are manifestations of the Lord to accept our worship. It says here, Angri Sevane, Sri Murtir Angri Sevane, to serve the lotus feet of the beautiful form of the Lord, which we establish in our mind by our thoughts, by our meditation, or we establish externally by collecting the elements of this world and forming them into a suitable image which represents the Lord. And then, by the Lord's causeless mercy, He enters there and agrees to accept our worship. This, I know that brings to mind, there was one community in New Brindavan, ISKCON, West Virginia, and they very much centered, in the early days, in the 70s, they centered their entire community on the worship of the deity, Radha Brindavan Chandra. Sometimes they would say RVC. RVC, Radha Brindavan Chandra. And they had different paraphernalia. In the deity room, they would engrave the paraphernalia, the plates or the cups, so they wouldn't get mixed up with some other people's things or whatever. And it would say RVC. And whenever you saw those initials on any item, table or chair or any type of item in, around the temple, oh, this is it, RVC. This is Radha Brindavan Chandra's personal items. And you return to the deity room. So this concept that Kirtananda Maharaj was understanding is that Krishna, the deity, is everything, is a cynosure of our eyes. And the deity, the Archamurti, the Srimurti, as it says here, Shraddha Visheshita Priti Srimurti Arangri Sevane. That with very special Vishesh, a very special type of deep and pure faith, Vishesh Shraddha and Priti, a special kind of love, a love that you don't express towards anyone else. The depth of the love and the quality of the love which we express towards a Srimurti should far exceed any love that we express towards someone of this world. Because Krishna is from the other world. He's from the spiritual world. So the deity is from the spiritual world. The spiritual world comes down, enters the deity and brings all of his blessings and mercy and entourage and pastimes and everything come into the deity. When you hear the stories of the six Goswamis, they would talk to their deities, and their deities would even walk with them or move with them, dance for them. And of course, this Sakshi Gopal, he walked across India to Vijayanagar, and then later he was established in Puri. So deities, they can walk, they can talk, they can eat, they can sit, they can do anything. So this is the transcendental speciality of the deity. So one is meant to worship like that. So in this community, Kirtananda was always encouraging everyone, oh, we must do this for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. Everything for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. Cooking, cleaning, distributing books, collecting money, building a new temple, buying more property, increasing the farm production, increasing the milk production, taking care of the cows, go-seva. Everything for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. So the devotees in the early days, they used to sacrifice. Everything was self-sacrifice for Krishna. And they would sacrifice their own comfort for the comfort of Radha Vrindavan Chandra. They didn't have much money, so they collected their money. They collected the money together and they put in a heater in a deity room. And then they would cut wood, even in the snow or whatever, they would cut wood and make sure that heater, that wood-burning heater, but always have wood in it during the winter, so Radha Vrindavan Chandra would be nice and cozy, nice and warm. But there was no heater where the devotees were staying. They were freezing. It was like icicles coming out of their nose. You know, it was like freezing. In the Brahmacharya Ashram in the winter, you go, and it's all steam come out. And then, you know, it's really cold. And so many blankets and sleeping bags and socks and sock hats and sweaters and thermal underwear and had about 20 kilos of clothing on you every night. You go to take a rest. It's like going underwater in a diving suit. You had so many layers of thermal underwear and sweaters and socks and socks on top of socks and hats on top of hats. But in the morning when you came to have darshan of Radha Vrindavan Chandra, they were smiling, they were happy, they were warm. And you could feel the heat coming out of the deity room. So they had enough money. And then when it came to food, well, we don't have much money, but we have to make sure that Radha Vrindavan Chandra are fed nicely. So they got their nice sweets and all their dried fruits and all nice things. And what did the devotees eat? There was 100 devotees, and they took 5 kilos of oats. And 5 kilos of oats and 20 and 30 kilos of water. And you cook that 30 kilos of water with 5 or 50 kilos, I don't know what it was. And a little bit of salt, and then you cook it and cook it and cook it, and you get what is called oat water. Oat water is like thick water. It has some water with a little body to it. And that was the lunch, oat water. And then, of course, it was a big thing in the summertime when the apple trees were giving apples. Then you could have apples and oat water. And then sometimes they would can some apples for the winter. So, but the deities were getting burfi, rasgulla, rubri, samosas. So you can imagine how much interest there was in Mahaprasadam. People were pretty enthusiastic about Mahaprasadam. In some temples, there's so much Mahaprasadam that they have to give it to the cows. Like in Gita Nagari, I've seen temples where there's so much extra Mahaprasadam, the devotees were so well fed. They don't have any room for the Mahaprasadam. So you take the Mahaprasadam and they give it to the cows, the temple cow or bull. The cow is eating samosas. Rasgullas, Club Chivas. I've seen some temples like that. That's pretty opulent. Forget about green grass for the cows. Get them samosas and pakoras. So there in that community thrived because of the many reasons, of course, obviously, but at least what they say and what Kirtananda says or said and what people generally observed was that at one time that was a very thriving, dynamic, spiritual community, come together in unity, that means come, unify around one purpose, one idea. That's called community, right? Come unify together, commune. So that spiritual community was called, in fact, it was called the New Vrindavan community. They all agree that the success of that community, or at least a one-time success, a long-standing success, was due to the exclusive emphasis of the pleasure of Radha Vrindavan Chandra. Liking with special interest for worshipping the feet of Sri Murti. So that was a community that was implementing the 60th principle of devotional service, which is called Shraddha Visheshita Priti Sri Murti Murtir Angri Sevane. And when you lived there or visited there, everybody, all the inmates, as they call themselves, New Vrindavan, the inmates, all the devotees there, they very much would talk about Radha Vrindavan Chandra. Did you see Radha Vrindavan Chandra? Oh, it looks so beautiful. We have to do this for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. Prabhu, do a nice job. This is for these are Radha Vrindavan Chandra's cows. This is Radha Vrindavan Chandra's kitchen. It was very, very personal. Everything was connected. So this was interesting. We can actually see in front of our eyes the living principle, the expression of this principle of nectar devotion. This is number 61. Srimad Bhagavat Artana Maswado Rasi Kesaha. He's saying these last five, 61, these are the 64 limbs of devotion, the last five, which are 61 through 64. 61, 62, 64. I guess 60, what we just said, is also included. Yes, from 60 to 64, these five principles is what is known as Panchanga Bhakti. So, and I don't know if it says here, I suppose it does. In some places, I think maybe in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says if someone executes even one of these principles slightly, he can easily attain love of God, Krishna Prema. So we mentioned one, Sri Murti Seva. But it says, Shraddha Visheshita Priti Sri Murti Murti Angri Sevane. So it's a little more qualified than just serving the deity. Having faith and great affection for serving the deity. So it's serving the lotus feet of the deity, of the beautiful Murti, with very special faith and love. That's one of Panchanga Bhakti. Panchanga means five limbs, five angas. The second one is swado rasikai saha, tasting swad, arta nam aswado. It's interesting, it's arta nam swado. It says tasting the name and the meaning of the Srimad Bhagavatam saha with rasike, in the company of advanced devotees that are actually relishing bhakti ras. The relishing and experience and tasting of bhakti ras swado, or swarana, it begins on the platform of bhava. Till that time, at the platform of ruchi or asakti, everything is somewhat theoretical. But this, so these rasika bhaktas, they're very advanced devotees on the level of bhava and prem. The second of the fifth limbs, number 61. Tasting the nectar of the esoteric meaning of Bhagavatam in the company of Bhava and Prema Bhaktas. And here it says, relishing Bhagavatam in association of devotees. So there's some fine points of difference in these two translations of the same verse. And Bhana Maharaj is saying this. Number 40, well, it's the other 44. This is the 41st principle. Which of the totality, this is 61st. He says, relishing Bhagavatam and association devotees. Here it says, tasting the nectar. Shriman Bhagavat Artha. Artha means the value, the meaning. And it says, Nam, Swado. Swado means taste. Ashwaranam. Tasting the Nam, the meaning of the Nam, and also the meaning of the Bhagavatam. Tasting the nectar of the esoteric meaning of Bhagavatam in the company of Bhava and Prema Bhaktas, because Rasa, Bhakti Rasa is tasted at the level of Bhava and Prema. So that, of course, that's a devotional principle, and all these principles will contribute to developing pure devotion, Uttam Bhakti. And they're all very powerful. And of these 64, these five, which were mentioned last, of course, some of them have been mentioned earlier. They've been alluded to. Worshipping a deity in so many different ways, etc. Hearing a Shastra. So here it's being specific. It says Srimad Bhagavat. It doesn't just say daily hearing Shastra or daily studying Shastra. It says relishing one particular book. It doesn't say Bhagavad Gita Ashwarana or Swarana. It doesn't say Goswami Granta Swarana or any other Vaishnava book. It specifically says Srimad Bhagavat. Srimad Bhagavat Art. Artha Ananama Swaro Rasike Saha. Because this book is very special. The book itself is full of ras. It's called Rasa Granth, Rasa Shastra. Unlike any other Shastra, Srimad Bhagavatam is the paramount, topmost rasic literature because it describes the Mahabhava of Radharani. Ras cannot go any higher than that, than the Madanakya Mahabhava of Srimati Radharani, which is portrayed in the 47th chapter of the 10th canto, Brahmar Gita. So the Bhagavatam is a vessel full of ras. It is a vessel full of different bhavas, Shanta ras, Dasi ras, and ultimately and finally Madhurya rasa, Braja Madhuri. Very sweet and very intimate and very confidential and very deep. So how to approach that, how to taste that scripture, Swado, Srimad Bhagavat Artha Nama Swado. How to do it? This is a devotional principle, but it's difficult to taste these things. You have to have some access, some entrance. So the access to this nectar, the entrance to this, or the opportunity to taste this nectar will come through the association, Rasika Bhakta Saha, to associate with Rasik Bhaktas, which obviously is quite rare. They're not all over, they're not easily found. But whenever they speak on the holy Granth, Srimad Bhagavatam, if one hears from them, then he'll hear coming from their mouth so much rasa-filled talks, so much prema-filled talks. And this rasa will be carried through the means of sound. The rasa is mixed in the sound. Just like sometimes you get a medicine, a homeopathic medicine, they say mix this medicine with water. And the water itself may be clear. The medicine itself, the drops of homeopathic medicine generally are clear. They're colorless. And if they have any taste, they taste like alcohol. They all taste like alcohol because it's processed through alcohol. So you mix that homeopathic liquid in the water and you drink it. And so water and medicine are both clear. And once the medicine is diluted in the water, you really can't taste the alcohol. It just tastes like water. But the effect is there because that water is mixed with something special. So the sound vibration. So I'm hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from this person and that person. So what's the difference between hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from a newly initiated person and an advanced person? Same Bhagavatam, same shlokas, same water, but one is plain water, and which also has its value. Water has value. Water is purifying. Water is health-giving and nourishing and health-sustaining. And so is any recital of the Bhagavatam. Any Bhagavat Shravan. Any Bhagavat Shravan. We say Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. So Shravanam, any Bhagavat Shravanam, is Shabda Brahman, hearing a transcendental sound. It is purifying, nourishing, beneficial, and maintains our spiritual health to hear the Bhagavatam. But when we hear the Bhagavatam from an advanced devotee, then that, what that medicine is mixed in that water is his rasa, his ras, his bhakti ras. That's why he's rasiki, a rasika, a rasika Vaishnava. So the same Bhagavatam, same shloka, same speaking, same water. One water has homeopathic medicine mixed in, one water is plain. One Bhagavatam is being spoken by Krishna Das. He just got Brahman initiation after 1 year in the Swiss temple in Zurich. And another Bhagavatam is being spoken by a very advanced and realized devotee. So it's quite a difference. And the difference is judged by its effect. Phalyam parijiyate. You judge something by its effect. So lavamatra sarasanga. Just you serve a city, you hear that, rasa-laden talks from a advanced devotee, it actually transforms the heart. In some cases, immediately in a matra. A lava matra means a small portion of time, a few minutes, hearing, your heart becomes transformed. Or if not in a few minutes, even after a few months of hearing from an advanced devotee, then there's so much transformation takes place. Because the ras, the harikata, harikatamritam tatta jivanam. The harikata is mixed with so much amrit ras. And that amrit ras sometimes has immediate effect. And if not immediate, then it has cumulative effect. It builds up as you hear more and more. Then finally, it creates a realization. It creates a new outlook. It creates a new wave of determination. And it creates a new understanding of Krishna. So therefore, Rupa Goswami is making some qualification here. He doesn't just say, Srimad Bhagavatam Artha, Artho Nama Swaro Bas. He doesn't just say Swaro, taste the meaning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because how can we taste unless we are receiving it in a tasty way? We have to learn how to taste and we have to receive it from someone who's tasting it. So then he gives a qualification. How to taste? From whom can you taste? You have to taste with a rasika, a rasike saha. That is the most important part. Everywhere Bhagavatam is being recited, especially in India, it's quite popular, Bhagavat Saptaha, because there, everyone's following the example of Parikshit and Shukadev, and they're following the Shastra conjunction of Bhagavat Mahatmyam, which is in Skanda Puran and also in Padma Puran, there's Bhagavat Mahatmyam, glories of Bhagavatam. And there's a story of Dandakari, or I think Dandakari and some other persons, and Gokarna and Dandakari, and they were recited the Bhagavatam for 7 days, and then his brother was trapped as a ghost inside some bamboo reeds. Then he burst out of the bamboo reeds and gave up his ghost body and got a body, liberated body again. So this 7-day recital of Bhagavad is glorified in the Puran. Very purifying and very powerful and beneficial. Lots of Sukriti. So all over India there's Bhagavad Sapta, Bhagavad Sapta, Bhagavad Sapta. We see in Vrindavan every day another poster, another billboard. So-and-so Shastri and so-and-so Pandit and so-and-so Trivedi and Chaturvedi and Dwivedi and all the Vedis. They're like, as we say, a dime a dozen. There's lots of them. There's so many. At any given time in Vrindavan itself, there's probably 15 Bhagavad Saptas going on. All over the place. This temple, that temple, this ashram, that ashram, Fogal ashram, this ashram, everywhere. Raman Reti and Madhavan Colony, Chaitanya Vihar. What to speak of Delhi? If you go to Delhi, there's 100 Saptas every day somewhere. Oh, it is very good. That's nice. But, so this is hearing Bhagavatam, but this isn't the kind of hearing Rupa Goswami is talking about. This will not bring one to Braj Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. This will bring one to the lotus feet of a rasika someday in the future. One will accumulate so much Sukriti by this Bhagavat Shravan that he will get the punya fall and the power, you can say, pious credits to be able to meet an advanced devotee and hear the Bhagavatam from his holy lips. And then he'll really make tangible progress on the path of bhakti, which they may not even want beforehand. They may be simply hearing Bhagavatam for material improvement, art. So this is the most important thing, to try to hear the Bhagavatam from a very highly advanced and pure-hearted soul who has some... It's rare, of course, it's quite rare. Because Bhava Bhaktas and Premi Bhaktas aren't flying all over the place. Number 62. Sajatiya shie snigde sadhu sangha svato vare. Sajatiya snigda sadhu sangha svato vare. Keeping the association of such superior sadhus who are of similar temperament and taste and are affectionate. And here it says, associating with like-minded, affectionate, superior devotees. And basically similar. So everywhere we say sadhu-sangha, sadhu-sangha, sarva-shastra-hoy, lava-matra sadhu-sangha, sarva-siddhi-hoy. All the places everywhere the scriptures are telling sadhu-sangha, sadhu-sangha. Then when you meet the sadhus, they say, study the scriptures. Read the shastras. I say, wait a minute, I read the shastras, and they say associate with the sadhus. So I'm following the shastra, and I've come to the sadhus. And I meet the sadhus, and you say, have you read Bhagavad Gita? No, you should read Bhagavad Gita. Have you read Srimad Bhagavatam? You should read Srimad Bhagavatam. Have you read Chaitanya Charitamrita? You should read Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I go to the shastras, and they point me to the sadhu. And I go to the sadhu, and they point me back to the shastra. I'm like a ping-pong ball, boing, 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 back and forth. But they're actually two sides of the same coin. Shastra-vakya, sadhu-vakya. Shastra-vakya, sadhu-vakya. Whatever the words are, the sadhu's words are the shastra's words. And the shastra's words are the words of the sadhus. So sadhus are shastras personified, and the shastras are the immortal teachings of the sadhus. So sadhus are walking shastras. Sadhus are walking shastras, and shastras are sitting sadhus. And when a sadhu sit down, they take the form of shastras. When the sadhus sit down, they take the form of shastras, and when the shastras move around, they take the form of sadhus. You got it? it's a lot of maybe confusing, but and this is a fact. So therefore, but he doesn't just say that. Rupa Goswami, he's very particular about the adjectives he uses and the qualifying words he uses in his delineation of the principles of sadhana bhakti. This is sadhana bhakti chapter, Dvitiya Lahiri, second wave, Purva Vibhag, Eastern Division. He's saying, okay, sadhu sangha. Okay, everyone's saying sadhu sangha. Associate. Yes. Oh, where did you go? Oh, we went to this satsang. We had some satsang with some people from the Chinmayananda Yoga Society. Chinmayananda Yoga Society, satsang, sadhusanga, sadhusang, as they say in Hindi, sadhusang. They don't like A's. A's are forbidden. You can't say Arjuna, or you have to say Arjuna, sadhusang, no sangha. But that's Hindi, but in Sanskrit they do say the A. They say sangha. And they say Arjuna, believe it or not. Because if you ever hear from Sanskrit, people that speak Sanskrit, if they give lectures, when they say Arjuna, they say Arjuna. But everybody, every Hindiwala says Arjuna, Arjuna. The A's are edited. Sarusang, Kans. Say King Kans. But in Sanskrit, they'll say Kamsa. And then Indian people say, well, who's that? You say, Kans, King Kans. Krishna killed King Kans in Mathura. This Hindi is like somewhat altered Sanskrit, or let's say bastardized Sanskrit. bastardized and mixed up with Urdu and all these other Urdu and English words. That's modern Hindi. You take a big pot and you put Hindi inside, and then you put 70% Hindi, shud Hindi. Then you had 20% Urdu. Then you had 10% Persian. Then you had 5% English. And mix it all together and cook it on low heat for 400 years. Then you have modern day Hindi. It's like a hodgepodge, mishmash, whatever it is. So he's qualifying this term, sadhu sangha, with some very important words. Two very important words. Sajati. Jati means my caste. Your own caste. My caste, my family, my group. And then snigda. Snigda means sneha. This softness, this melting, liquid affection, liquid love, sneha. Like the water, the ice on the top of the mountain, it melts in the summer and it flows down the mountaintop in rivers. The sneha is like that. It is a downward flow of affection from a senior to a junior. And that's why they say that in the family, the youngest child receives the most affection because the affection flows down. Go wild. And so this is these two qualifying words are most important for our consideration. And this snigda, which I said is a downward flow of affection, like melting ice going down a mountain and rivers in the summertime. So this affection, it flows from the very high and vast mountain-like hearts of the devotees. It flows down to the junior devotees, from the senior devotees to the junior devotees. The snigda, sneha, the downward flow of affection, from up to down. So because there's many sadhus, we can choose to associate with so many sadhus, but one qualifying point should be they should be affectionate. Now, when you travel around India and visit different ashrams, if you happen to do that, Haridwar, Rishikesh, Badrinath, wherever you may find yourself, oftentimes you find the most affectionate, loving, kind, concerned, well-meaning sadhus in Mayavadi ashrams. Very friendly. You come there with Urdhva Pandra Tilak, Vaishnav Tilak, and you say, "Oh Maharaj, I'd like to stay on the bank of the Ganga and do my bhajan. I'm working on one book. And I heard maybe sometimes you give rooms to sadhus." "Yes, yes, yes. Oh, welcome, welcome. Where you came from?" "I came from Vrindavan." "Oh, Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe." He's got three lines, you know. It's completely Mayavadi in every way. But he says, "Oh, I'm coming from Vrindavan." "Oh, Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe. Do you want a room on the, you want to see Ganga or you want to be other side, the top, bottom?" "Oh, Ganga," they said. "Okay." And then he comes, the Mahant himself will show you the room. "And this is your room and this and that. And we have our food here, and here you can take this ticket, and with this ticket you can get 1 liter of cow's milk every day. We have one goshala, some rich people running one goshala, so all the sadhus are entitled to 1 liter of milk every day. And how long will you stay?" "Oh, maybe 1 or 2 months." "Okay, fine." No charge, zero. All facilities, food, free cow's milk, it's for no money. And so kind. "And how are you? How's your bhajan? How's your book going? Everything nice? You see them day to day, time to time." No discussion of philosophy, no conversion or preaching or this or that. Just, "You do, okay, you're there, you're a sadhu, you do your thing. We're happy to have you here." So it's like pretty touching, very touching. So we've been around India here and there, staying different places. And we met many, many wonderful, affectionate personalities of different philosophical lines, diametrically opposed philosophical lines, but very kind, genuinely kind. I remember one ashram we stayed in Puri, and then I sometimes wouldn't come for lunch. They were serving some prasadam, And I would sometimes take their... They have deities. It's kind of mixed, kind of a hodgepodge yoga ashram. They weren't exactly Mayavadis. Some were Mayavadis, some were Vaishnavas, some were Hanuman Bhaktas. But they had deities, and they were worshipping, offering with tulsi leaves, so sometimes I was taking food there. And I was considering it prasadam, Krishna prasad, because they had Radha Krishna deities, and the Pujari was around Bhakta with Tilak and everything. You know. Kind of one of those hodgepodge places. But extremely nice people. And some days I wouldn't take, and then one disciple would come to the place where I was staying. Oh, what is wrong? Are you sick? What is wrong? Oh, I wasn't hungry. I didn't come. Oh, but Guruji hasn't taken lunch yet because he won't take until everyone, all guests and all inmates take lunch. And he's thinking you must be sick, and if you're sick, then he doesn't feel like he can take food. So we all, disciples, we were concerned. You didn't come. Are you all right? Are you sick? We're more concerned about our Gurudev, because our Gurudev won't eat unless you eat. I said, oh my God. I said, I'll be right there. I couldn't believe it. And the extent of the feelings. And then even one day, like I told one person in the afternoon when I took lunch, I said, I'm not feeling well. I don't think I'll be coming for breakfast. Breakfast is fruits and this and that. I was staying in my room. Then about 9 o'clock around breakfast time, door knocks. There's one brahmachari there with tiffin. He said, oh, Guruji heard that you weren't coming for lunch, so he had some special preparations made for you because you're sick. You know, some tapioca. Some easy things to digest. And I was like, Hare Krishna. So much sneha, so much affection, so much snigda. But the sajati was wrong. So when you're looking for a sadhu, affection, this is important. But not as important as sajati. That's why sajati is mentioned first. Sajati yashe snigde sadhu sangha svatovare. The most important thing is sajati. Sajati. My jati, my family. I am Gaudiya Vaishnava. Is this sadhu I'm associating with? Is he Gaudiya Vaishnava? And that's the first sajati. Is he in the same line? Is he Vaishnava? That's first thing. Then more specific, is he Gaudiya Vaishnava? That's the next consideration. And then, so we want to find out, first he should be in the same family, Gaudiya Vaishnava, he or she, whomever. And then the second thing that we should look for is affection. Is there some love flowing towards me from this person? Some care, some interest, some concern? They may be very advanced, they may be very learned, they may be very rustic, they may be very whatever, maybe Siddha, Premi, whatever. But they have zero affection for me. Maybe they don't like Western people. Maybe they have some bigotry or some... whatever they are, somehow they look at me and they say goodbye. You know. There's no warmth. There's no affection. There's no concern. There's no care. Maybe it's my bad karma or my bad luck or whatever. So even though there's sajati, but there's no affection, then it's not very... won't be very positive result by associating with them. So, Rupa Goswami is saying, you're going to choose sadhu sangha? Then, as it says here, keeping the association of such superior Vaishnavas who are of the similar temperament and taste and are affectionate. So affectionate is snigdar sneha, and temperament and taste, that's how he's translating it. And here it says, like-minded, affectionate, superior devotees. But in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu, by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in the commentaries there, is explaining that sajatiya means same family, because oftentimes you find very affectionate sadhus are Nimbarki Sampradaya or some other Sampradaya. But their angle of vision is different. Their idea of perfection is slightly different than ours. So this is the idea of similar temperament and taste. They should be Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and if we're interested, if we have some taste for interest in temperament in a particular bhav, within Gaudiya Vaishnavism, there is all Gaudiya Vaishnavas are interested in Braj Bhakti. And then within Braj Bhakti, there are different tastes. Taste means rasa. There's Madhura Ras, Vatsalya Ras, and Sakhi Ras. These are the three available tastes in Braj. And the other tastes are mixed in there. They're part and parcel. So if we're interested in Vatsalya Ras, and wishing to become a follower, to follow the moods and mellows and sevas of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, then it would be, we should select the superior sadhu who is in the same, he's also in Vatsali Ras, then that will be most conducive for improvement and advancement. And if we have some interest in Madhura Ras, then we should specifically select advanced devotees that are interested or developing or established in Madhura Ras, the mood of conjugal love towards Radha and Krishna. And if that's a Gaudiya Vaishnava, that means he's fixed in the mood of Radha Dasyam, the service of Radharani, and Kinkari Bhav, Palyadasi Bhav. So that we have to do a little selectivity here, when we choose association. Of course, nowadays, even they throw in institutional considerations. Here, there's no consideration of institution. It's about lakshana, sadhu lakshana. What are the lakshana? What are the sarupa and tatashta lakshana of the sadhu? The sarupa lakshana. The sarupa lakshana, the primary characteristic of the sadhu is sajati. At least in this verse. The sarupa lakshana and the tatashta lakshana. The primary consideration, is he a Gaudiya Vaishnava? That's primary. That's sarupa. Is he actually a Gaudiya Vaishnava in good standing? And proper behavior, proper speaking, and is he more advanced than I? That's the main thing. And that will benefit us by associating. Then a secondary consideration, which is not so primary, is the snigdha aspect, the sneha, the affection. Is he affectionate towards me? So if you can find these two qualifications or these two lakshanas, sarup lakshana of the Gaudiya Vaishnava sadhu and the tatastha lakshana of the Gaudiya Vaishnava sadhu, these two you find together in one person, that person is very good association. They're advanced in devotion compared to your own stature, and they're of the same family, and they're in the same rasa that you're interested in, Madhura Ras and Braj Bhakti, and they're also affectionate. Then your progress will be very solid and sure and steady and quick in such association. So this is the 62nd limb of devotion. We'll discuss the other two tomorrow. Any questions on this? He says these are so important topics. Yeah, Vedavyas compiled the Vishnu Puran is the Vrindavan Leela described in the Vishnu Puran is Vedavyas writing about what he's heard about. And the Vrindavan Leela in Srimad Bhagavatam is Srila Vedavyas writing the Vrindavan Leela which he saw. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is written in what they call Samadhi Bhashya. Bhashya means language. Govinda Bhashya, the language of Govinda. The commentary on the Vedanta Sutra written by Baladev Vidyabhushan is called Govinda Bhashya because it's understood that this was revelatory work. He was in a dilemma how to defend the Gaudiya Vaishnava's worship of Govindaji in Jayapur because the Ramanujas were contesting the qualification of Gaudiyas to worship Govindaji. Because he said, the Ramanuja Acharya, who was the guru, of the king of Jayapur, he said, my dear disciple, king of Jayapur, why are you giving the seva puja of your deity, Govindaji, your royal deity, to these Gaudiyas? They're a bunch of illiterate Bengalis. And now, moreover, they have no commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, whereas we have Sri Bhashya, which is the language of Lakshmi Devi, Sri Bhashya, commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And we are much more qualified to worship your deity, your family deity, which you're under, you're protecting of Govindaji, than they. So we challenge it. And you're my disciple, so you should give the Seva Puja to me. So that was really a very difficult thing for the king of Jayapur, because on one side, his grandfather and great-grandfather in so many generations have been engaging and favoring and supporting several families of Bengali pujaris in the puja, seva puja of Govindaji. Because when Govindaji left Vrindavan and came to Radhakund, then went to Kamyavan, then went to Jayapur, the pujaris, the Bengali pujaris, went with him. And when they got to Jayapur, they continued to worship him because they knew how to worship him best, and he was their deity, Rupa Goswami's deity. So the deity was in good hands in Jayapur. The king was the king is the protector, and the pujaris are the worshippers. So the king was a Rajasthan, Rajput, or whatever they call, and pujaris are Bengali Brahmins. There was no problem. But then one Jayapur king became initiated. So then they challenged. They said, "King, and the king was said, all right." Then he asked the Bengali Brahmins. He said, "So where is your commentary on the Vedanta Sutra?" And they said, "Well, Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, written by Vedavyasa himself. After writing Vedanta Sutra, he wrote this." And then the Sri Vaishnava said, no, all bona fide, authorized Vaishnava Sampradayas have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, except you. We also study Srimad Bhagavatam. We also accept Srimad Bhagavatam as such a wonderful scripture. But we also have our commentary written by Ramanuja. So where's your commentary? You're bogus. And the king said, what do you have to say about that? Well, we'll be right back. Just hold right there. So they ran off to Vrindavan and said, help. They ran for to the big generals of Vrindavan. They ran to Vishnu Chakravarti and Baladeva Vidibhushan. They said, listen, we're in a heap of trouble down there. Because we're only pujaris, we're not pandits. We're a bunch of family, grihastha, we're coming from generations and generations of Bengali Brahmins, and we're simply pujaris, we're not pandits, we're not learned, we're not Shastra Vidvan. We simply go ding, ding, ding and twirl the incense and make some eggplant pakoras and some rice and sabji, and Damodar's happy. All we know is he's happy and we're happy, and that's how it goes for the last 300 years. Now all of a sudden we're being challenged to produce some educational erudite work. And it's beyond us. We don't have the capability. So please help us. Vrindavan is the place of all the scholars and pundits and siddhas. So please benefit us. So then Vishnu Chakravarti at this time, he was quite elderly. He was not very capable of going to Jayapur. Probably not in much of a mood also. He was living right here. He was living in in his kutir, Shamakund, in Manasabhavan Ghat. And so the Bengali Vaishnavas came here and he said, listen, I have trained one very advanced and great devotee, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, and all these teachings. So I would like to depute him to go to Jayapur on my behalf and represent the Gaudiya Vaishnava religion. And I'm sure that Govindaji will assist him in all the proper, in the debates or discussions about this issue. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan went there, and then again he personally faced this challenge as a representative of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas from Vrindavan, which is a seat of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the primary seat, the capital of Gaudiya Vaishnavism for the entire India was Vrindavan. And it was established here by the six Goswamis and perpetuated by Srinivas and Narottam, Shamananda, and later by Vishwanath, Baladev, Ganganaran Chakravarti, etc. So this is the capital, the embassy. Gaudiya Vaishnava embassy for the whole of India. So the representative from that embassy, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, went to Jayapur to defend the cause of the Sampradaya. And then they had these debates in a place called Galta, which is outside of Jayapur. There's some Ganga flowing there. One rishi, Galava Rishi, did austerity there, and people in the area were complaining that all the water had gone kara, the water had become bitter. And can you do something about it? Because rishis are supposed to have power and be able to help people. So he said, all right, and then he stuck his foot in a side of a mountain or something and called the Ganga, and the Ganga came there and made a second Gangotri. So Ganga's coming, Gomukh, there's a Gomukh there, and Ganga's coming out of the side of the mountain and flowing down into a pool. It's called Galta, named after Galava Rishi. So that water is very pure and sanctifying there. So that's where the debate took place. And there's a temple there, Vijay Govinda, Vijay Govinda is a deity of Baladev Vidibhushan. So he was praying there, "Oh Govindaji, I've come here to represent your cause." And I have told them, they said that they have challenged, unless you produce a commentary, you Gaudiyas produce a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, then you will lose the right to worship Rupa Goswami's deity of Govindaji, and the Seva Puja will be given to the Ramanuja Sampradaya and my Gurudev. So Baladev Vidibhushan was really in a fix. He was really in a great dilemma. So he started praying to Govindaji and praying to Rupa Goswami and praying to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura and praying to Mahaprabhu and all the Mahajanacharyas. And by their mercy, when he was resting, then he had darshan of Govindaji in a dream. Govindaji told him, Radha Govinda, Govindaji, Govindadev, Sri Govindadev, he said, "You just start writing. I will give you everything." So he wrote all night, and then he produced a book, and then he called it Govinda Bhashya. Govinda Bhashya is the language of Govinda, spoken by Govinda, the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by Baladev Vidibhushan, which is the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary, aside from Srimad Bhagavatam. But the contemporary Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary on the Sri Vedanta Sutra, which is called Sri Govinda Bhashya. So in the same way, back to the point, Vedavyas, after hearing about the Leelas of Krishna and Vrindavan and writing them down in Vishnu Puran, he was not satisfied by that hearing process, because hearing didn't give him access to the actual ras, as Sri Nandananda was saying. He missed the ras. It's like having a body without a soul. It's like a robot, a mechanical instrument. A body without a soul is like a mechanical instrument. Of course, it doesn't function. Like a robot, very mechanical. So the Vishnu Puran Vrindavan Leela is very robotic or mechanical. It's simply reporting what he's heard. So he was despondent and unhappy, and he revealed his mind to Narada Muni, his guru. Narada Muni said, "You have to write it again. You have to write the Srimad Bhagavatam again." Even the Srimad Bhagavatam was written twice, actually. He wrote it one time, and it was devoid of ras, and then he wrote it again. It's like an epilogue. And in the epilogue, he added the ras. He injected the ras. So he received that ras by going into samadhi. He deeply meditated. Vedavyas deeply meditated on the Braj Leela and prayed for the mercy of Radha Gopinath and Radharani and all the Parishads of Krishna. And in deep samadhi, he actually had spurti. He actually saw the Leelas which he had heard about. He saw Ras Leela. He saw the Danikasura, Bhagasura. He saw all the different Leelas. Gopi Vastraharna, Yajnapatni Leela, the Yajnapatni is feeding Krishna. You know, he saw all these Leelas in samadhi. And then in that samadhi, he wrote the second edition of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the annotated or improved edition of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that language of that Bhagavatam is called Samadhi Bhashya, that which was written in samadhi. So this is a nice point about the Bhagavatam. And this is the topmost scripture we should hear. Nityam Bhagavata Sevya Bhagavad Gita Mahashloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki.